AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Let's get an update on the rail workers' negotiations. Take a look at threats to fertilizer supplies. Check the optimism of GOP leadership heading into this fall's elections. And let's take a look at how global ag companies might decide to change plans to stay out of Russia for next year's growing season.
Live from El Grande Finale Conversational via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk This Morning. It's a Friday for hell. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer and Sean Haney. We'll also be joined by Mike Steenhoek from the Soy Transportation Coalition, and yours truly will be lurking as well. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you.
A little anticipation there. Did you like it?
Yeah, I was starting to think maybe we lost you there for a moment, but no, you were there. You were there.
Just
You're
let it breathe.
There. It's good stuff.
Let it breathe.
That's right. That's right. Welcome. Glad that you are with us this morning for another free-for-all. Man, the list of topics for us to discuss today is long. There are some of these issues I think are critical to how you are going to do business in the year ahead. Davis, this fertilizer thing is starting to kind of swirl out of control again, isn't it?
I'll have details in the news here, but I don't like the looks of it.
I don't like it either. I don't like it at all.
Who was it we were talking to that said, "Let's get Europe through the winter."
That was
in
me.
Reference to natural gas.
Yeah,
it seems like somebody. I forget who it was.
One of it might have been
it's
me.
One of today's prominent thinkers, shoot, the name slips me. Anyway,
And
this just sort of adds to that. Not only are we concerned about just getting enough natural gas where it needs to go to keep the lights on in Europe, now we are worrying about getting enough fertilizer output to get next year's crop out of the ground.
Absolutely.
This is no good.
No, it's a more than a bit scary. So something that we're going to have to really pay attention to. And it's not just Europe. I mean, China.
China
is in on it too. Okay, I know you've got some details. Let's go ahead and get to the news.
I do. Well, let's begin here. A new survey finds that business leaders say hackers pose a more significant threat than inflation or recession, listing growth as their largest priority, while at least half say they are planning or implementing layoffs or hiring freezes. Chip?
Yeah. You know what? I'm sorry. I was just looking at a note.
Yeah. No.
I was looking at an old co-op offering fall NH3 at $10.60 per ton. Last fall was $7.50. So, but at least it's not $1,600.
Yes. Yet. Yet.
Yes.
Existing home sales in the U.S. fell in July for a sixth straight month, the longest streak of declines in more than 8 years, as higher mortgage rates and a shortage of homes for sale are cooling the sector. Sales of previously owned homes dipped 5.9% in July from the previous month to 20.2% below a year ago. This according to the National Association of Realtors.
Okay. You know, we've been pointing at the housing market as one of those indicators of whether or not we are in a recession or not. This is starting to suggest, and not starting to suggest, it's a little more evidence of the slowdown.
St. Louis Fed President James Bullard said yesterday, given the strength of the economy, he is currently leaning toward supporting a third straight 75 basis point interest rate hike in September. Bullard told the Wall Street Journal, quote, "I don't really see why you want to drag out interest rate increases into next year." That prominent thinker once also said, "Just rip off the Band-Aid." And here we are.
Here we are. There's a difference between inflation and a strong economy. And I'm not sure that the economy is as strong as indicated by rising prices. There's a big difference.
Well, and as we mentioned earlier, this according to Bloomberg, European fertilizer producers are once again curbing operations because of rising prices of natural gas, with at least one quarter of the region's nitrogen fertilizer capacity thought to be lost already. And in China, a power crunch in the Sichuan province is stopping fertilizer output there, Chip. And the big concern for me here is that we leave a production hole. So then for into spring, now we're playing catch up as far as global supplies go.
That is exactly right. The process has been in place, and you don't disrupt the production of the fertilizer without creating that hole. It just doesn't happen.
Well, the European Drought Observatory said a, quote, staggering portion of Europe is now exposed to high drought hazards. Chip, 47% of EU land is now placed under the level of warning and 17% at the more severe alert level.
Crazy.
Renewable energy generation is expected to comprise 22% of U.S. electricity generation this year, according to a new report from the Energy Information Administration. That's a trend the administration expects to continue as more wind and solar come online. The EIA's short-term energy outlook sees an increase in U.S. renewables from previous years, which accounted for 20% of electricity gen in both 2020 and in 2021. Chinese President Xi Jinping and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin both plan to be at November's Group of 20 meeting in Indonesia. Russia warned of a man-made disaster at a nuclear plant in Ukraine, which it captured in March. And the Biden administration is reportedly mulling an end to its practice of paying for COVID-19 shots and treatments, shifting more control of pricing and coverage to the healthcare industry. Could cost the consumer a little bit more. Chip.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich. She is the editor there at Farm Journal's Pork. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
You know, we talk about trade and exports on pork all the time, but sometimes it's, you know, we got to realize that our best trade partner is right next door, right?
Right. We've been seeing a really great uptick to Mexico continuing, but we're also experiencing some great growth in Colombia and, of course, the Dominican Republic with the challenges they've had in this past year with African swine fever, obviously. So we've really been starting to see a greater focus on those countries who are near to us pay off with increased sales and really working on promoting those different cuts of pork that are not, you know, as popular in those areas, trying to get them to diversify what their mix is.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about the export market into Mexico, that one does compete with the U.S. meat case because they really like U.S. hams, don't they?
They do. They really love their U.S. hams. And so we've been seeing kind of a greater focus there in Mexico on trying to get them to see some of the other cuts they can use on the grill and substitute into some of their more popular dishes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then that Central American market, it's one that we've been watching, the National Pork Producers Council working to develop that market. The U.S. Meat Export Federation has been working, and it's happening. It is happening. We're actually seeing it start to add dollars. And exports in general to all destinations adds like $60 to a value of a fed hog. So we need to continue to maintain these export demand. It's good stuff.
Yep, so. Absolutely.
All right. Good stuff, Jennifer. Thank you very much. We will talk to you again later. That is Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. All right. When we come back, we're going to kick it off by getting an update on what is going on with the rail workers' negotiations. How real is a threat of a strike? We're going to talk about that on the Free For All next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
AgriTalk is brought to you by FBN, where for a limited time, new customers can save an extra 5% on AgSaver glyphosate. Visit FBN.com/direct. Terms and conditions apply. Shining through the trees.
Crickets are singing in a lightning bug. At least it's not the Sandy Chafee.
Itchy Chafee band. Itchy Chafee sand band. That's right.
That's it. That's it. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That is Davis. And
hello.
This is the free-for-all on AgriTalk. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Chip.
All right. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Good morning.
It is great to be here, Chip and Davis. Looking forward to it.
Excellent. Excellent. And we're going to kick off the conversation with Mike Steenhoek. Mike is the Executive Director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. Mike, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
I am fine, Chip. Good to be with you.
Good. Glad you are here because you've got a really you're tapped into what's going on in the negotiations between the rail workers and the railroads. What's the latest? Because there's growing anxiety over a potential strike starting in about 30 days.
Yeah, there's a kind of a collective bargaining arrangement between a host of railroad worker unions, and the railroads themselves kind of collectively bargain on this as well. And they always aspire to a five-year contract. And that five-year contract was supposed to be renewed in 2020, but they haven't come to an agreement. And it's mostly a discrepancy on wage increases. And obviously some benefits, but it's mostly wage increases. And they haven't, over the past 2 years, they haven't come to an agreement. So what that did is it triggered the appointment of what's called a presidential emergency board. President Biden had appointed a three-person panel in middle of July to come up with a set of recommendations. And those recommendations were due on August 16th. And so they released these recommendations. And now there's a 30-day period for the two parties to either accept those recommendations or come to a new agreement. And during this course of these next 30 days, and that expires on September 16th, law prohibits them from striking. So if they don't come to an agreement, there's a lot of worry that there could be some degree of slowdown or stoppage as abhorrent as that is. But this is definitely not a time for anything like that to happen. So it certainly merits our attention.
It certainly does. It you know... When I obviously the sticking point is on wages, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, they're probably trying to decide, is it going to be an 8% raise or a 10% raise? No, the rail workers are looking for a 31.3% increase over 5 years. The railroads have proposed a 17% wage increase, and the presidential board recommended a 24% wage increase. Mike, if wages go up that much, I mean, that cost is going to be transferred down to the users, isn't it?
Yeah, that's usually kind of the unfortunate reality for agriculture is that transportation costs disproportionately get passed on to the farmer, not onto the ultimate customer, not absorbed by the transportation provider. Often passed on to the farmer in form of basis. And so that's something that, you know, we obviously are very attuned to. Look, I have no problem with any worker in this country, given the sticker shock that we're all experiencing with inflation, to ask for higher wages. We certainly affirm that. But, you know, clearly we want, and we're not taking sides between the railroads and railroad employees. Our side is on the American farmer and the American economy, and what clearly would be detrimental to both, seismic to both, is if we had any degree of slowdown or any greater uncertainty, because right now, rail service is not hitting on all cylinders. It's not very reliable right now. So what we need to be on a trajectory of is improving rail service, not declining rail service. And any additional uncertainty, slowdown, certainly if it extends to an entire strike, which is, I don't think is likely, but anything at the margins is really going to impede our ability to satisfy customer demand. And we've got a lot riding on the American farmer right now for production, but also therefore on transportation. So that's something that this is something in a very important issue for us.
What made you say that you don't think the strike is going to happen?
Well, I just think the consequences would be so seismic. And I have to imagine, again, trying to put on my political hat, but I have to imagine that the administration and that Congress would say, we need a railroad stoppage in the middle of September, like we need a hole in the head on the eve of a midterm election. So, I mean, I know elected officials are watching this intensely. Now, even though the administration, you know, they convey to the unions, hey, we've got your back, we're your advocate, it is in no one's best interest to have any kind of slowdown. You know, particularly for farmers in the middle of September when harvest is coming online.
Timing couldn't be worse.
And then you also have to think about it through the political lens, you know, on the eve of a midterm election. So everyone would lose with that. And so I have to think that as passionate as both sides are, and there's a lot of frustration with even the presidential emergency board recommendations, particularly from the unions. But I have to think that we wouldn't get to that point of an entire strike.
Okay.
But could you have a slowdown? And even a slowdown would be really detrimental.
Right. Haney?
Yeah, Mike, Sean Haney here from Real Agriculture. We saw this week CP Rail and the Teamsters Canada Rail Conference reach a two-year agreement, rather short, but they reached an agreement. Now, they reached an agreement based on binding arbitration. Is there an opportunity here for binding arbitration, essentially based on the situation of we could use a labor strike as much as a hole in the head?
Yeah, I think anything like that, I mean, certainly it's possible. You know, there's not an automatic trigger for arbitration. You know, Congress could intervene and say and mandate that workers will stay operating. So that certainly is on the table. So there's a lot of potentials there. Obviously, we want to see something happen by middle of September that benefits all parties.
Yep. Jim, any thoughts on this?
Well, the labor unions know that they have a very labor union friendly Democratic Congress. So they'll likely eventually get most, if not all, of what they want. And it's not just raises, it's the thousands of dollars in bonuses and some health care issues there. But I fully expect Congress would, you know, come into action here, you know, by the a time frame to avoid and to enhance.
Okay. Does that make sense to you, Mike?
I think it does. And so, yeah, while both the majority in Congress and the administration, they're very supportive of the unions. And you very well could see some final agreement that's a couple percentage points above the presidential emergency board. But they're also, the unions don't have all the cards just because of this, the dire consequences to the broader economy with the backdrop of this overall supply chain challenge that continues to persist, that's something that would be any kind of slowdown or any kind of stoppage would really be detrimental. And I think Congress would intervene and the president would intervene to some extent.
Okay. All right. Good stuff, Mike. We appreciate the update, buddy. Thank you.
Hey, it's always good to be with you.
All right. That's Mike Steenhook. He is the executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. Man, I said it, timing couldn't be worse on something like this, because if there is even a slowdown in the work schedule with harvest coming on, that's terrible. And then, you know, everybody's alluded to it. The timing couldn't be worse for Congress either, Jim. And so I think that makes a lot of sense, what you were just talking about. Yep. This get Europe through winter attitude, Davis. I think the I think that's so critical. We've got just a little bit of time left here in this first segment. I want to touch on that. Yeah. The nitrogen quote that we got was from Northeast Iowa, even north of where I'm at. So 1,060. What's your thoughts when you hear that?
Well, you know, we saw prices run up, and then we saw them sort of pull back into the seasonal lull, which is not atypical. You know, you get through side dress, you get through all of that, and the demand falls off, and everybody's feeling pretty good. But, you know, let's not forget what ran us up in the first place, in part, was a production hole because Europe started pulling production offline, and global demand just kept going up and up. And I don't expect the global demand for fertilizer is going to fall back. Meanwhile, if we've got another production hole, we've got another leg higher in nitrogen.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think that's right. And, you know, start penciling it out. Get those bids for if you're going to do any fall applications, get your bids. Get it figured out. Take a look at it against the DEES 23, NOV 23 futures. And if it pencils out to a profit, you probably want to think about getting something booked for this fall and even for next spring. Okay, when we come back, Jim's got an update for us on the GOP confidence level going into this fall's elections. I want to start there.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady Beach. It's been a rough week for the wheat market, but getting a little bit of a bounce today. What's going on?
Yeah, pretty good corrective bounce, Chip, but yesterday was technically damaging. So, you know, if they bounce back today, get them back in, futures back into the sideways trading range after looked like a potential downside breakout yesterday. So this is a pretty critical day for bulls, I think, moving forward. And even with that, even if they do get back into that sideways range, I think that, you know, they're kind of swimming upstream here. Just a lack of fresh bullish news, and the U.S. dollar remains strong and everything. So, but it's technically corrective today, and that's spilling over into the corn market as well, which is trading to the upside. Not so much in soybeans. Both soybeans and soy meal are under pressure, while soy oil is higher this morning.
Yeah, just some trend reversals in that soy complex is what it looks like to me from what we saw earlier this week. We get a cattle on feed report this afternoon, right?
We do. The on-feed number as of August 1 is expected to be up 0.7%, so just fractionally. So nothing major there. I think the placements number, that'll be the one to watch. The trade estimates are on both sides of unchanged and from a year ago, and so that will be the critical number. And, you know, really it's driven by how many animals have been pushed off of pastures because of the drought conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. Really quiet in lean hogs.
Well, yesterday, just a washout, a technical washout. And the October contract's trying to bounce back a little bit, but not finding much buyer interest. We're seeing more seller interest in the back end of the market again today. Yeah. So let's watch that into the close.
Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got a free-for-all going. Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer, Real Agriculture, Sean Haney. Davis Michelson is with us as well. Jim, you had an update on the GOP attitude going into this fall's elections. McConnell seems to be backing off a little bit.
Yeah, well, he's seen more than a few races, Chip. He said there's, quote, probably a greater likelihood the House flips than the Senate. And Senate races are just different. They're statewide. Candidate quality, he says, has a lot to do with the outcome. Now, that's his way of getting a shot at Trump, you know, former President Trump and his recommended candidates. So he's setting it up here, Chip. And, you know, in my latest speeches, I say if the elections were held today, the Democrats would likely maintain control of the Senate. But they're not being held today. Senate races always tighten up the last 2 months of the cycle. So we'll see a tightening. But boy, the current polls where they show the Democrats have some pretty good candidates in these tight races, plus they have the funding. The Republicans are behind in funding, so we'll have to watch it. But I think the odds right now are shifting. You can see the shift in the mood in this one. Amy Walter of the Cook Political Report had a similar thing where, you know, months we heard Democrats are doom chatter. Now there's a shift in mood.
What's creating that change? Is it just the quality of candidates, you know, as McConnell says, or is it issues based? Like what and how does that tie to the fundraising differences?
Well, I think it's quality of the candidates. They're faulting. They're making forced mistakes by themselves. You know, not forced by their opponents. And we've seen this before. I mean, there's some people who have said over the years, when it comes to Senate races, Republicans could screw up a two-car funeral.
Yeah. Chip, I think Jim's trying to tell us that Dr. Oz is not a good Senate candidate.
Well, let's say he shouldn't go shopping at a supermarket. You know, just some of these forced, self-forced errors. But in Georgia, I think you're seeing lack of seasoning. And while the candidates, you know, Herschel Walker in this case, is getting better, I mean, the numbers are going the opposite way for a number of key candidates.
Yeah, some of the analysis that I'm seeing on the Georgia race now is not very nice. I mean, when they come out and say just because you're a great running back doesn't make you a good Senate candidate, it's messaging like that that hits very quickly, very hard, that I think is creating some of the differences. I think as we get closer to the election and the talking points get more focused, I think some of the momentum is going to move back, because the Republican candidates, Jim, are going to stay focused on the economy, right?
Well, they should. And here's the thing history shows too, Chip. The Senate in close elections or in semi-wave elections, they tilt toward one party. So that could change the mood to tilt toward more of the Republicans. So that's other perspective on this one. They just have a way of falling to the one party or the other.
Right. Right. Jim, what is the deal? Okay. What is the deal with Senator Tim Scott out of South Carolina? And the reason that I'm asking this is, I mean, I've got a lot of respect for him. I like a lot of things that Senator Scott has to say. But why is Senator Tim Scott at the start of a commercial for Ashley Hinson, a Republican congresswoman from the 1st District of Iowa? Why are they leading that spot with Tim Scott?
I don't know. I'd have to check on that one. But he must poll pretty good in Iowa, but I'd have to check on that. I'd have to check on that. He would be the new Republican that the more middle of the road you know wants to see in the party. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that probably hits the nail on the head right there. Davis, have you noticed that?
Yeah, I've noticed that as well, and it does seem to be a bit of a shift, which might be welcome, you know, dare I say.
Right, exactly. Okay, The FSA is sending out additional emergency relief program applications, Jim. What's the latest there?
Well, that's it's still phase one, Chip, to where they're getting out, I think, what was it, about 18,000 or 19?
I think it's 18,000.
Yeah. So that's just continuing the process where they didn't have the most up-to-date information covering losses from 2020 and 2021. So I would think that this is going to be the end of the phase one, and then we're gearing up for phase two.
Okay. All right. Yeah, just wanted to get that.
And these are also pre-filled applications, so that they'll be pre-filled. The FSA just had more information to put them in, Chip, that they didn't have before.
Gotcha. All right. Guys, we got back in touch with Bill Northey yesterday. I had a conversation with him yesterday. I thought it was a fantastic conversation. He really brought some great information to us. Jim, EPA is committed to tightening the screws on atrazine so tight that we may not be able to use it.
Well, that, and I don't know whether the excellent Bill Northey got into the current issue in town here, is that the administration's wanting to go the way of the state's rights issues in this regulatory thing, where you get a hodgepodge of rulings, Chip, and that's also of concern, rather than to go the FIFRA, where you go more the federal.
Right. What a mess that would be.
Yes. Well, you're seeing it, remember, in Proposition 12, not only in California, but Massachusetts. And now Q3. Both of them are waiting on the Supreme Court. So, these are critical issues here that I think that has to be decided on either at the federal level or at the state level. But if you're going to get the patchwork on states, you're going to have a lot more problems in ag.
But it really creates issues in some of those states, like California, for example, where that does push acres around a little bit. If you have to use products like that to control specific weed outbreaks that you have, and also increases regulatory costs for companies as they try to bring new products to the market, because you're dealing with regulatory affairs in each state as opposed to one body. It's hard enough to meet the benchmark for one body, never mind figuring out the differences between Montana and Georgia.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible.
Bill Northey is too practical. I enjoyed that discussion.
Yeah, you talk about practical. You talk about practical when he gave us the line, ideas are easy, implementation is tough. Mm-hmm. What a practical approach to, and we were talking about the potential for some regulated use of nitrogen to cut nitrate runoff. And go ahead.
I don't know if you ask him this, Chip, but the current, I've been working on a story, talking to a lot of people, and not just to point fingers, but the ag sector's lack of strategic vision for the current situation, both government and private industry officials, they fail to make sure be adequate inputs and programs to deal with those other logistics issues. I know some elements were beyond their control, like COVID, et cetera, but it laid bare that the lack of long-term business and contingency plans by the government and the private food sector. So my question is, now that we know what has occurred, what's going to be done for the future? Like in the case of fertilizer, what issues, that you can not totally guarantee, but make it better that you can plan on fertilizer supplies. I want to hear officials talk about that rather than just reacting to short-term problems.
They're throwing some money at it. The federal government is. They're trying to incentivize production of fertilizer here in the U.S.
Yeah. So how about permitting plants flexibility, the permitting side?
Right. But, I said they're throwing money at it for a reason. You can't just throw money at a problem and make it go away. you've actually got to take some action, and that takes planning and the strategic thinking, as you just said, Jim. I couldn't agree more. Talking about strategic thinking, had Don Schiefelbein, who is the president of the NCBA, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and Region 11 Director Kevin Escobar from the U.S. Cattlemen's Association, had them on the Farmer Forum on Wednesday. And, guys, there's some strategic thinking happening between these two. They realize that if all they do is focus on the wedge issues, as Don described it, if all you do is focus on that, the haters of animal agriculture are going to seize on that. They're going to feed into those issues so that the industry tears itself apart from the inside out. So their idea is, let's focus on some of the things on which there is agreement, stand united on these issues, and present that united front to show cooperation. That is the kind of strategic thinking that we need from commodity groups. I think it's fantastic.
Yes.
Haney?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It shows maturity. It's a recognition that there's a bigger battle to fight than sort of throwing darts back and forth between two, in some ways, two groups that have a lot of common ground.
That's right. That's right. I thought it was great. Okay, we're going to wrap up the free-for-all when we come back on today's AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Okay, guys, we're going to wrap up this week's free-for-all. Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, Davis Michelson with me. We were talking about the momentum in the GOP going into this fall's elections and how it seems to be fading a little bit. There was a tweet exchange this morning, and I was looking for it. Actually, President Biden sent this tweet out yesterday. The Inflation Reduction Act will cut the deficit and fight inflation, and will do it without raising taxes a single penny on families earning less than $400,000 a year. Now, this response came from Casey Kimbrell, who's been on AgriTalk before, and I think it sums it up very well, what is happening with some of the momentum. Casey says, this administration seems to believe that if you say something enough times, it automatically becomes fact, no matter how ludicrous it is. Seems to be working so far.
Well, here's the thing. Republicans accused Democrats during the Trump administration of being more about what they're against than what they're for.
Right.
At this point, I'm not sure what the GOP is for. You know, I would love it if we could maybe say the same thing here, but I'm not even sure we can go that far to say, well, what does the Republican Party really stand for? I'm not seeing anything obvious.
And there's warfare between the GOP in Congress, Davis. The House will come out with a series of principles or whatever they'll call them. But McConnell is shying away from that. He wants to this election to be on the Biden administration policies.
Yep.
Yeah, we have criticized quite a bit the Democrat side of the aisle going back to the last election and through the primary. You know, who are they going to be? What is this party? It's the left is taking over.
Yeah.
Well, the Republicans have the same problem here on really the, and we saw this during the Trump administration, but I think it's just being sort of put, you know, really pumped up now is sort of the battle between the traditional Republican, you know, the, say the Bush Republican, mm-hmm. versus the Trump Republican. And, you know, obviously that played out during what we saw this week in Wyoming with Liz Cheney. But this fight's going to continue, and it ebbs and flows. But if you look at some of these races, and if you look what happened to Cheney, Trump, it seems like he's kind of taken over.
Right. It's a warning shot. The Republicans have become complacent. You know, wow the voters. You know, let's get a little excitement.
Come with a plan. I love
anything
that, Davis.
At all. Yeah,
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Well, but Chip, the plan has to be more than just the progressives are trying to do this to you.
Like, yes.
To actually have a plan besides, both political parties do this, but, and Casey's tweet is right. You say something enough, you start to believe it. It's the mm-hmm. same thing as what we saw during the last administration about Mexico paying for a wall. And people steering towards, I just want to just tell me what I want to hear.
Yeah.
That's really where we have sort of worked our way towards.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, in the last election, the Democrats said what they were going to do. A lot of people just didn't listen.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And they're doing it.
No.
They are doing it. I mean, I've checked out some of the student loan conversations that are taking place. There are people that are scared to death that they're actually going to restart payments. Can you imagine? That when that does happen and they start the economy and the spending, the impact that it's going to have, holy smokes. The timing of all that is going to be very critical. Okay, we've got a couple of other things that I want to get to. Haney, you tagged me on a story about Bear and their plans for Russia in the year ahead. What's going on?
Yeah, so obviously with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, there has been a movement for companies to withdraw from Russia. Example, Starbucks, McDonald's, and others. Bayer back in March said that they would only do business in Russia in 2023 if Russia, you know, withdrew from the Ukraine. Right. They've shifted and they've said, you know, based on the potential food crisis, you know, companies like them can't really, I'm paraphrasing, but companies like them can't afford not to do business in Russia because of the unintended consequences that would be caused by a withdrawal. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to follow here because there was an article in the Globe and Mail this week in Canada about Viterra, the grain company, who's trying to buy Gavilon. They are also still doing a lot of business in Russia, and the article was highly critical of them. I think we're going to start to see, because a potential food crisis gives cover for companies to re-engage in Russia. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I think we're going to see a bit of a spill here, an avalanche of companies making these kind of statements.
Yeah, I think that's right. And Putin, Davis, says that he's going to attend the G20 meeting. Along with
you know what? Here's the thing. Quickly, it's one thing to show up at a meeting like this by yourself, alone, as a rogue. It's a whole other thing to show up with one of your homies there. Xi Jinping, he's set to be there as well. His first trip outside of China since Jan 2020. That's significant that he's leaving the country and that he and Putin are both going to be there.
Think about it in the banquets and sort of the wine and cheeses. Who will not, like, as he tries to get pictures with other world leaders, people like, no. Yeah. I'm doing the back pedal.
And with Putin clearly having leverage, like what you were talking about, Haney, it'll be a significant meeting, I'm sure.
Yeah, when he walks up holding his glass to engage in a conversation, that's going to be a buzzkill. That'll break up groups.
Yeah, but there's more than a few of those G20 nations who have not followed through on any sanctions against Russia, too.
That's the thing. We hope it's a buzzkill. And if it's not, that's a major signal.
Good point. Good point. Jim, latest on U.S., Taiwan, and trade talks.
Well, they announced the principles and that they're going to talk later this fall. But I think this is another irritant with China. And their top officials have said one of these days you're going to go too far.
Yeah. Yeah. But at least this is an effort to legitimize Taiwan. It's not an effort to poke a stick at China by going through Taiwan to do it. I don't think. I mean, mm-hmm. am I, Have I got the right read on that?
Well, this was in process before all the kerfuffles. Okay, so yeah, this is one in a series of things the administration wants to do. But I like to see market access in trade talks. And
great job today, fellows. Great job. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yep. Cheers, everybody.
You bet. Okay, Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Davis Michelson. Davis is going to come back this afternoon, and we're going to have a conversation with Jim McCormick, agmarket.net. That's at 2:06 Central. Join us then.